Welcome back to Chapter and Verse. This is our final episode, episode 8, of our discussion about Acts chapter 15. In this series, we are discussing the topic of Acts chapter 15. What really happened? Through the centuries of Christian doctrine, there have been many interpretations of what exactly happened in Acts chapter 15. How should Gentile believers coming to a faith in a Jewish Messiah apply that faith to their lives? In our last episode, we ended the episode describing how the list that James directed the Gentiles to adhere to was part of the laws of the kingdom that they had just become residents of. This expectation that the Gentiles adhere to these instructions had nothing to do with their salvation. Instead, it was about what they were to do after they were saved, how they were to live their lives in a way that was in harmony with and in obedience to the laws of the kingdom. I then mentioned that this was all tied to Galatians chapter 2. I stated at the end of the last episode that Galatians chapter 2 and Paul's rebuke of Peter will explain the entire scenario that we see played out in Acts chapter 15. How so? Well, let's take a look at Galatians chapter 2, beginning at verse 11. But when Cephas, Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles. But when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with him, so that even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that their conduct was not in step with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas before them all, "If you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you force the Gentiles to live like Jews?" Then Paul goes on to comment that we are not justified, that is, we are not saved, by performing commandments. We discussed Paul's words here in Galatians chapter 2, verses 15 through 21, back in episode 4. If you need a refresher on that conversation, please go back and rewatch that episode. But we see here in Galatians chapter 2 this conflict that arose between Paul and Peter. Now, some have taken this passage out of its proper Hebraic understanding and suggested that when Peter was eating with the Gentiles and living like a Gentile, as Paul describes, that he was purportedly eating unclean animals like the Gentiles did. But that wasn't what Paul rebuked him for. If Peter had been eating unclean things, why would Paul have been so silent about that? Paul's contention with Peter wasn't about what he was eating. It was that while Peter was in Antioch, he refused to eat with the Gentiles, but only after the Jews from Jerusalem arrived. One key factor to consider here is the time frame of the authorship of this letter to the Galatians. Most modern scholarship agrees that Paul wrote this letter to the churches in the Galatian area between 40 and 49 AD. This would have been before the Jerusalem Council took place, which took place around AD 50. Thus, this interaction between Peter and Paul and Peter and the Jews from Jerusalem, all of that took place before James's decree. So the entire scenario we see unfolding in Galatians chapter 2 between Peter and Paul took place in the absence of any rules or directives concerning what was acceptable or not in regards to interaction with the Gentiles. As we discussed in episode 1, Peter took heat from both sides. In Acts chapter 11, we saw that after Peter left Antioch and returned to Jerusalem, he was accused by those in Jerusalem of inappropriate behavior, from their perspective anyway. Specifically, they said about him, "You went to uncircumcised men and ate with them." And now we have all the factors all in one place. Galatians chapter 2 and the account of Paul's rebuke of Peter is tied to Acts chapter 11 and the accusation that Peter ate with uncircumcised Gentiles, which leads us directly back to Acts chapter 15. If you will recall from our last episode, I asked three questions. The first one we answered in our last episode. That question was about the basis upon which James made his directives known to the Gentiles. The answer was that it was based upon the fact that the law is the righteous standard by which all citizens of Adonai's kingdom are expected to live. We looked at how this is true of both the Old and New Covenants. The second question I asked was, what do these four things James directed the Gentiles to abstain from in Acts chapter 15 have to do with one another? And how did suggesting that the Gentiles do these things appease the Jews who were insisting that the Gentiles needed to become circumcised in order to become saved? What ties these things together? Our answer lies here in tying together Galatians chapter 2, Acts chapter 11, and Acts chapter 15. As we just looked at in Acts chapter 11, the criticism Peter received from the Jews in Jerusalem was that he ate with Gentiles. We saw in Galatians chapter 2 that when these Jews showed up in Antioch, Peter withdrew from eating with the Gentile believers. Why did he do so? It says right there in the verse, because he feared the circumcision party. It was the same group of people who visited Paul in the same church in Antioch that we read about in Acts chapter 15, verse 1. The circumcision party that Paul refers to in Galatians chapter 2 is the same group of people who, in Acts chapter 15, demanded that the Gentiles be circumcised in order to be saved. That is what provoked the convening of the Jerusalem Council, where James issued these four, or was it five? We'll get to that in a few minutes. These four things that he directed the Gentiles to do. Are you smelling what I'm stepping in here? Do you see how all these things are tied together as one big continuing issue? Now keep in mind, the Jews who laid into Peter in Acts chapter 11, they didn't criticize him for sharing the gospel with the Gentiles. They didn't criticize him for praying for them. They didn't criticize him for allowing the Holy Spirit to fall upon them. They criticized him for eating with them. Why would they do that? Answering that question will solve this entire conundrum. You see, it all comes back to the topic we started off this series with back in episode 1. Gentiles were viewed by the Jews as being defiled. They were viewed as being dirty and stained by the pagan world and its practices. Thus, in the minds of these Jews, these Gentiles needed to convert to Judaism in order to become saved. That, of course, would require circumcision, as according to Jewish tradition. Remember how we covered that in episode 4, where we looked at what Chabad.org had to say about the Jewish conversion process and how circumcision was one of the four requirements to convert to Judaism? Again, this was viewed both in the first century and still today by modern Orthodox Judaism as the path to salvation. But in hearing the arguments made in Acts chapter 15 at the Jerusalem Council, James says nothing about circumcision. Instead, he says that they should instruct them to do five things. Things that have nothing to do with circumcision, nor do they have anything to do with salvation. So how did James's answer solve the issue? And how do all these things tie together exactly? Well, the answer to question number 2 from our last couple episodes, as well as the answer to understanding the complete context of Galatians chapter 2, Acts chapter 10, Acts chapter 11, Acts chapter 15, Exodus chapter 12, Romans chapter 14, 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Revelation chapter 2, and many, many more passages, it all comes down to one thing: table fellowship. What do I mean by that? Remember how I gave the example of the bottle of wine in episode 6? How if I had been invited to an Orthodox home and I had brought a bottle of wine with me, that the host family would gladly accept that wine and consume it if they were the ones that opened the bottle. But if I was the one that opened the bottle, it would be considered defiled and they would decline to consume it. Do you remember that part? Well, that's essentially what's taking place in all of these passages I just rattled off. When Paul rebuked Peter in Galatians 2, it wasn't about the food that was being consumed. It was about Peter sitting down to eat with Gentiles, because he understood from the vision of the sheet that he had received in Acts chapter 10 that he was to call no man unclean. But then when the Jews from Jerusalem showed up, he quickly changed his behavior and only sat down to eat with the Jews. Now, this nonverbal communication on Peter's part had several effects. First, it justified the Jews' position that Gentiles were dirty and that they needed to be avoided. Second, it compromised Peter's trustworthiness with those Gentiles. Third, it inevitably sent the message to the Gentile believers that they had something to be ashamed about. I mean, Peter was rejecting them once these Jews showed up. So with all that in mind, when James instructs the Gentiles to abstain from the things polluted by idols, and from sexual immorality, and from what has been strangled, and from blood, he's listing off the activities the Gentiles should avoid because these specific activities would be interpreted by the Jews as pagan, idolatrous behavior. Thus, the Jews would continue to shun fellowship with them. But if the Gentiles proved that they could faithfully avoid such behavior, it would present a very strong case for the removal of those objections that the Jews would normally have to sitting at the same table and eating a meal with a Gentile. In other words, James was instructing the Gentiles who had come to faith to stop behaving like Gentiles. If they had truly been grafted into Israel, they really were to no longer consider themselves, nor should they be considered by the believing Jews, to be Gentiles any longer. They were wild branches, but they were grafted into the rich olive tree of Israel. Thus, they became part of Israel. If they truly had repented of their former ways, it should then be evident based upon their behavior. If the Spirit had been given to them, it was evidence of their status of having received eternal salvation by grace through faith in Messiah Yeshua. The next step, then, was to retrain their behavior, not to force them to conform to obtuse man-made traditions. James had just heard very heated arguments and long debates between both sides on this topic. He understood that the real concern the Jews had wasn't about whether or not the Gentiles were circumcised in the flesh. Their real concern was avoiding defilement by their interaction with these Gentiles. You see, in their minds, the way to avoid such defilement was to require the Gentiles to convert to Judaism, and then to conform to the customs of Judaism. If they did this, it would mean that they were living in submission to the rules of kashrut and various other customary Jewish practices, as prescribed by the ruling rabbinic authorities. In the minds of the Jews, if the Gentiles complied with the order to circumcise themselves and to convert to Judaism, it would then quell the reservations that the Jews had that created the distance between the two groups and the distrust that existed there. The problem, as we discussed in the first several episodes, is that the Jews had conflated terms here. Circumcision wasn't required for salvation. Converting to Judaism wasn't required for salvation. Unfortunately, in their zeal to maintain ritual holiness, which was an admirable quest, the Jews had ignored the fact that salvation comes by faith through grace, and not as the result of any list of works, behaviors, or actions. As I mentioned several times in the first four episodes of the series, this was the mindset that Paul found himself combating on multiple occasions in various congregations and fellowships. This struggle didn't just instantly disappear after James issued this decree at the Jerusalem Council, as is evidenced by Paul's continually addressing this topic. But keep in mind, as I pointed out just a few minutes ago, most modern theologians and scholars all agree that Paul's letter to the church in the Galatian regions was written before the Jerusalem Council. This means that everything Paul wrestled with about the doctrine of being saved by works versus being saved by grace was written in a pre-Jerusalem Council climate. That means that when we encounter those hard-to-overcome verses that antinomians try to use from the book of Galatians in order to justify how the law was done away with for Gentile believers, we have to understand that these people are perpetuating this mindset and operating under a false premise because they don't understand the context of the timeline of how events unfolded. Paul speaks in the letter to the Galatians with such strength, conviction, and passion about how we are saved by grace through faith and not as the result of works, specifically because he's theologically fighting against a bunch of people who believed the Gentiles could only be saved by converting to Judaism and then subjecting themselves to a bunch of extra-biblical rabbinic rules. So how does James' proposal solve this? It appeases the Jews by demonstrating the main concerns that they would ordinarily have about eating with Gentiles could be quelled. Eating together was an integral part of the first century practice of faith. We see this from passages like Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 20, and 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 46 tells us about the first century believers that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising Elohim and having favor with all the people. And Adonai added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Twice in this passage, in the description of how the disciples of Yeshua conducted themselves in the first century, it describes how they were in the habit of eating together. Now, as you can imagine, if you were of the opinion that someone would come to your table with filthy, dirt-covered hands and touch the same bread you were about to put in your mouth, you might have some concerns too. Well, that was the basic perspective of some of the believing Jews. The difference was that the filthy, dirty hands were seen as being spiritual in nature, not physical. If it were something as simple as merely washing one's hands, that could eliminate the discomfort, and that would have been far less controversial. But because it was perceived as being spiritual in nature, the solution then became much more convoluted. That's what led to this entire conflict and resulted in the Jerusalem Council. James suggested that the Gentiles abstain from things polluted by idolatry, from sexual immorality, from things strangled, and from blood. This provided the assurance that the Jews were looking for without placing unnecessary burdens on these Gentiles. It gave the Jews the peace of mind to know that if the Gentiles who were coming to faith the Messiah were abstaining from such pagan practices, then there was a much lower risk that they would cross-contaminate them and be rendered unclean via their interaction with these Gentiles. This allowed for the type of environment where table fellowship was then acceptable, and that allowed for the encouragement and interaction between all those who were in the first century churches. What it also accomplished was to at least momentarily squelch the mentality that the Gentiles needed to either become circumcised or to convert to Judaism in order to become saved. So James's judgment in regard to the Gentiles solved two issues. By requesting that all Gentiles coming to faith abstain from these four activities that were specifically associated with pagan practices, James not only put the Jews at peace about their interaction with the Gentiles and established that salvation by works, status, or position is improper, but he also established a proper middle ground between the two points. What I mean by that is that by pointing to commandments from the Torah, James showed that while salvation indeed comes by faith through grace alone, a truly repentant life demands a change in behavior. In other words, in placing these expectations upon the Gentiles, James is communicating that there is more to the sanctification process than simply confession and belief. Salvation itself comes by confession and belief, and no amount of works, status, or lineage plays a factor as a means unto salvation. But by citing from the Torah as the requirements for the behaviors the Gentiles were to implement into their lives, James establishes that after salvation, obedience to the Torah becomes paramount to walking in faith. Given the fact that the book of Galatians, which was written before this council was convened, and that book is typically used to support an antinomian theological framework, James's list of requirements directly refutes that type of framework. This is then further established by the fifth thing that James told the Gentiles that they needed to do. Now, I've hinted multiple times in this series that James actually gave the Gentiles a list of five things that they should do rather than four. This was the final question that we needed to answer from our last few episodes. Why have I intimated so many times that there were five requirements instead of four? Because we tend to make a separation in our minds at the end of verse 20, when in actuality, verse 21 is a continuation of the same thought that started in verse 19. Let's take a look at this passage again. Therefore, my judgment is that we should not trouble those of the Gentiles who turn to Elohim, but should write to them to abstain from the things polluted by idols and from sexual immorality, and from what has been strangled, and from blood. For from ancient generations Moshe has had in every city those who proclaim him, for he is read every Shabbat in the synagogues." Did you catch it this time? Verse 21 is often overlooked as simply a concluding statement, but it's actually the continuation of James's thought that started in verse 19. The point James is making here is this: let's tell these Gentiles to do these four things at a minimum for now, so that the believing Jews will feel comfortable enough to welcome them into their synagogues and homes for fellowship. Once the Gentiles have conformed with this list of behaviors, which, by the way, comes straight out of the Torah, then we can teach them the rest of the ways they should be conforming their lives to from the truth of Scripture. How is that accomplished? By allowing them to hear the Torah, Moshe, read in the synagogue every Shabbat. In other words, James is saying, "All right, everyone, let's tell the Gentiles to do these four things to get them started, and once they're in fellowship with us, they'll get to hear the rest of the Torah each week as they attend synagogue. Eventually, they will come across passages like Exodus chapter 12, where they will hear about how if they want to keep the festival of Passover, they must be circumcised first." In that type of environment, when these Gentiles no longer feel threatened, but instead feel included and welcomed, they will hear these type of scripture passages being read and discussed. If their hearts truly have turned to Elohim, and if they truly have repented of their former ways, then the Spirit will woo them and create within them a desire for the things that Adonai holds dear. That would include the biblical festivals, which Adonai calls his appointed times. If these Gentiles are leading truly repentant lifestyles, they will desire to conform to Adonai's instructions. In order to do so, they will discover that there's a proper way to go about things. Part of that instruction, as we can read about in Exodus chapter 12, verses 43 through 49, is that one must be physically circumcised in order to participate in a Passover meal. Now, unlike the situation that unfolds in Acts chapter 15, however, this act of circumcision from Exodus chapter 12 would not be viewed as something that was necessary for salvation. Rather, it would be viewed in its proper context as sanctification, not justification. Justification refers to being in right standing, being absolved of guilt, and it's linked specifically to salvation. Sanctification, on the other hand, refers to the ongoing process of walking in increasing holiness, being holy as he is holy. The process of sanctification happens after one has already been justified. In other words, after you are saved, you then begin to learn how to walk in holiness. In this scenario, the Gentiles would learn by hearing Moshe, the Torah, read in the synagogues. That would then tell them how to live out walking in holiness according to Adonai's standards. As they began then applying these instructions to their lives, this would further establish in the minds of those believing Jews that these Gentiles truly do belong in the household of faith, because they are conforming their lives to be in harmony with the instructions found within the Torah. It's very telling that after James gets up and presents this compromise, there's no record of contention. The plan James proposes is apparently well received by all parties. Neither Paul and Barnabas nor the Jews of the circumcision party appear to protest this solution. It even says in verse 22 that then it seemed good to the apostles and the elders with the whole church. Verses 22 through 29 then go on to detail the process by which certain men were selected to take this message to the church at Antioch, which of course was located in the Galatian region, which is where this entire debate began. Verse 31 then tells us how the message from the Jerusalem council was received by those in Antioch. It says there, "And when they had read it, they rejoiced because of its encouragement." Not only were those who attended the Jerusalem council pleased with the advice of James, but those in Antioch were also joyful to hear his declaration. These Gentiles now understood that they needed to conform to James's counsel and abstain from the things that he listed, and that as a result, they would then be welcome in the synagogue, where they would then be able to receive further instruction from the Torah, which they would be able to apply to their lives as it was revealed to them. In this way, they would be able to live their lives in a way that reflected increasing holiness and devotion to the king they had pledged themselves to. And they would be welcomed as full members of the congregation, able to enjoy table fellowship with the other believers and to be encouraged and learn from one another. So, what started off at the beginning of Acts chapter 15 as a heated debate about the status of Gentiles within the congregation of the believers ends at the conclusion of Acts chapter 15 with rejoicing and acceptance. What began as an effort to force the Gentiles to conform to man-made traditions and customs and seeking a works-based salvation ended in freedom and celebration as a compromise was reached that clearly defined salvation as something that was not dependent upon works. And the process of sanctification was laid out based upon the principles and precepts found within the Torah, Adonai's standard of righteousness. And that then brings us to where we are today. Declared justified by the one who bore our sins, our grief, our sorrows, and our death penalty and took them to the cross, and who put to death the debt we could never pay ourselves. In conquering the grave, he established the promise that one day we too will follow his example and rise from the grave in victory. Until then, just like the first century Gentiles, it is our job to focus on walking in holiness, to conform our lives to the righteous standard that he has established. We do not do this because we need to in order to become saved, but because we love our master. He's been good to us, and we are devoted to him. Out of our love for him and our devotion to him, we desire to live in the way that he has requested of us. In so doing, may we rejoice in the same way the believers in Antioch did when they heard the good news. May our lives reflect the glory of the one who set us free and adopted us as his own children. And may we hear from him when we enter his kingdom at the end of days. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your king. That brings us to an end of episode 8 and an end to this series on Acts chapter 15. Please join us for our next series entitled, Paul Called. He wants his context back. Until then, shalom.
Hi, I'm Kimberly with Lion and Lamb Ministries, and I am so excited to tell you about our new program on lionandlamb.tv. It's called Come to the Table. You know, some of life's best conversations happened around a table. Whether it's the kitchen table, your dining room table, or even just having a cup of coffee on your couch. On Come to the Table, we'll talk openly about real life issues on our messianic walk. Faith, family, and everything in between. And I'll introduce you to some friends of mine who are walking out their calling in powerful ways. So pull up a chair and join me every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on lionandlamb.tv. Come to the table and let's do life together.